There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
You must see the central narrative. That it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Friday, March 22nd, 2024, the 1157th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free a couple days later on a wide variety of podcast platforms, and of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/imyourmoderator. Okay, so it's Friday. Let's start the show out having a little bit of fun. Let's listen to some absolute panic and derangement from one of the worst commies that has ever disgraced himself before the American public, Bernie Sanders.
Next several months will be the most important in modern American history. Yes, Donald Trump is a pathological liar. He's a racist, a sexist, a xenophobe, a homophobe, and a religious bigot. Yup, Donald Trump has denied the election defeat that he experienced and is undermining American democracy every day, peddling conspiracy theories and converting the Republican Party into a cult of the individual. Yup. Donald Trump has contempt for a free media and has encouraged violence and the never-before-seen use of the military and federal agents against U.S. citizens. But if you believe Donald Trump's first term was dangerous, I want you to think for a moment about what a second term would look like. If Donald Trump is elected this November, the fight against climate change is over. Period. It's the end, and the people of this planet will have lost.
That guy was supposed to be the moral savior of the United States of America in 2015, according to the people I was dealing with in Hollywood. They actually tried to cancel me in 2015 and 2016 for not supporting Bernie Sanders. And that was my first insight into how far gone these people actually were. I was like, wait a second, can't you see that Bernie Sanders is a communist and he's always been a communist, and he's not actually describing what he's going to do? He was like, I'm a democratic socialist. It's not a communist. It's not a socialist. It's a democratic socialist. It's like those Scandinavian countries. The myth being that everything totally works over there. They have these great societies that we should look at and see as great societies. And sure, they were ethnically homogenous societies right up until the global slave trade targeted them with the incoming workers. But we were told that those Scandinavian countries, they were the most successful countries on the planet. Everyone should model themselves to be like those countries. I would say, what is the difference between democratic socialism and socialism? And they would say, Bernie Sanders answers that all the time. Just go to his speech at Georgetown University. And I listened to it a few times. And Bernie Sanders never actually described what the difference was between socialism and democratic socialism. He would just repeat his slogans again and again and again about the 1% and the millionaires and billionaires, which eventually just became the billionaires because Bernie Sanders was a millionaire. He had huge payoffs. I mean, a book deal after he pretended that Democrat primary elections that cycle weren't just blatantly and obviously stolen. And then they did the same thing to him again in 2020. Or maybe he just wanted to do that so he could get another payoff. And now that old dumb communist, despite having never accomplished anything in office for the 50 years he's been in office, now he has a Senate committee chairmanship. Now he really gets to make a difference. Except no, he doesn't. They're doing nothing. They're accomplishing nothing on behalf of an illegitimate president. All that work in the future will just be washed away. It'll be gone. He's mad that Donald Trump has changed the Republican Party into the cult of the individual. And that's very weird. Is he saying that Republicans have some sort of cultish commitment to individualism? That would actually be really welcome. But I don't see the Republican Party representing that at all in any formal way at this point. Or is he saying that the cult is around the individual Donald Trump? Again, we are all cultists. We do whatever Donald Trump tells us to do, except for when we don't want to, when we don't do what he tells us to do at all, like with the vaccine. On the other hand, we actually do have people who are in a cult and do participate in a hate movement. They legitimately worship the false god of scientific materialism. They worship the authoritative source from which all knowledge springs. They worship the experts. They worship the science. They worship the data. And they do whatever it says. They will literally poison themselves. They'll inject themselves with a toxic experimental substance that can't protect them from a disease that can't kill them. Because the TV told them all the smart people were doing it and they would get in trouble if they didn't. That's cult behavior. They have certain beliefs they are expected to express whenever it is demanded of them. And you can put this to the test anytime. Ask them if they believe in climate change. Yes. How many genders are there? They have no idea, but they are willing to agree with whatever number you think it is. Did masks work? Sure. Did lockdowns work? Sure. Did Joe Biden receive 81 million real lawful American votes? Okay, he did. They will say whatever is demanded of them because they know if they don't, they run the risk of being exiled. You know, like a cult. They have to do all of the things, even if it will lead to their own death. They don't care. And they will destroy the lives of their friends, their family, their coworkers, all the people in their life if those people fail to obey. And why are they so committed to that project? Well, because they don't want to be seen as the people on the other side. Because the people on the other side are wrong. How do you know they're wrong? They don't agree with the experts. And the experts would never lie because the experts are people like them, and people like them wouldn't lie to people like them. It's the people on the other side who are liars. And of course we know they're liars because they're also bad people. They're bad people because of the views that they express, which are false and racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, all the things that Bernie Sanders said about Donald Trump. And we know all those things are true because the people on the other side are bad people. And that's how we know we're good people. We base it on comparisons to those very, very bad people. As long as we're letting everyone know that we are nothing like them, we are in great shape. And so this crazy old communist lunatic who has never had consistent gainful employment in the private sector ever in his life. He used to occasionally work part-time as a handyman before he was able to begin getting paid by Vermont taxpayers for being a Marxist activist and gadfly. Bernie's state is the only state where anyone other than Donald Trump was named the winner in this recent series of fake primaries. Nikki Haley won Vermont, partly on the back of Democrat voters, but how messed up must the elections be in that state? But Bernie has a very serious warning for all of us. If Donald Trump is reelected, well, climate change, that agenda is over. It's over. We're going to lose our planet. That's right. It's really going to happen this time. Climate change is going to kill us all if Donald Trump gets elected. Therefore, vote for the communists again. Communists, they're so committed to the health of the planet that they are willing to kill off nearly everyone. Oh, I'm just kidding. Bernie Sanders is a Jewish atheist, so you know he has great respect for human life, and that is why he is such a devout communist, because there is no ideology that is more protective of human life than communism. I mean, right? I mean, right? Now, over the past few days, we have been talking about the decision from Judge Engoron in New York in one of the fake Trump cases, this one about the civil fraud. They suggest that Donald Trump overestimated the values of his various properties in order to secure loans from banks. Those loans were completely repaid with interest, so the banks made a profit. It was all done on time. The banks were very happy with the business transactions, but nonetheless, years and years later, beyond the statute of limitations, New York Attorney General Letitia James takes Donald Trump to court, and they have decided that his real estate is actually worth virtually nothing. He lied about the whole thing, and therefore he owes the state of New York nearly $600 million if he wants to appeal this absolute travesty. And over the course of the week, we have been told that Donald Trump is going broke. He has no cash. He can't secure these bonds. In order to get the money to cover his legal bills and expenses, he's going to have to sell out the interests of this country to our foreign adversaries, or maybe these mean old Republican billionaires who are throwing a fundraiser for him. Gosh, Donald Trump, he is just going to be owned by all of these people, just as he's been for these last 9 years. Except, of course, that has never proven true at all. And the people making those claims are the same ones defending the illegitimate President Joe Biden, not only from the very real charges of his illegitimacy, but also for his career of political corruption, actually selling out the interests of this country to our foreign adversaries. And hopefully we'll get to some of that later. But Donald Trump was supposedly broke, or at least cash poor, or at least couldn't secure bonds. But also there's that whole merger thing that happened today. And this is CNN's headline from this morning. Trump is about to get $3 billion richer after deal is approved to take his company public. But it won't solve his cash crunch. You see that? Donald Trump is broke, even though he also just got $3 billion richer. I mean, imagine what it's like to be one of these people. They are going around simultaneously arguing that Donald Trump just reaped a $3+ billion windfall, but also that he's broke. And so therefore, they should be able to seize his assets if he wants to appeal one of the most obvious political persecutions in our country's history. But they're not in a cult. They're definitely not in a cult. And they're certainly not in the cult of the state. Bernie Sanders is worried about the cult of the individual, and maybe he meant Donald Trump, but in terms of the sovereign individual, Bernie Sanders is a Marxist. He is actually in the legitimate cult of the state. He is a worshipful servant of the state. And the sort of leftist like George P. Fletcher, Columbia University Law School professor who wrote Our Secret Constitution, he is a proponent of those principles. He wants the constitutional republic replaced with a democracy. He wants liberty replaced with equality. And he wants the focus on the sovereign individual replaced by the focus on the good of the nation. But like I said, they're not in a cult. They're definitely not in a hate movement. And that is not why they are cheering on the fact that Donald Trump might have his assets seized by an illegitimate government after a political persecution. They're just people with principled disagreements. That's what it is. CNN wants to make sure that its audience of standard issue villagers knows that Trump is broke despite this new $3 billion windfall. And they write, the new company will be called Trump Media and Technology Group and trade under the ticker DJT, Trump's initials. It will own Trump's struggling social media platform. Oh yes, Truth Social is just struggling. Shareholders voted to approve Trump Media's merger with a blank check company following years of legal and regulatory obstacles. Trump will own a dominant stake in the public company with shares worth more than $3 billion at current market prices. However, experts tell CNN there are numerous practical, financial, and legal reasons why this deal is unlikely to solve Trump's imminent cash crunch. President Trump won't be able to monetize that stake right away, said Matthew Kennedy, senior initial public offering market strategist at Renaissance Capital. And thank goodness they found an expert to make an obvious, widely reported factual claim. They then get into a lengthy discussion about how Truth Social is not doing all that well and TMTG is just drastically overvalued. Trump probably has no idea what he's doing, and all of these media organizations will be right, just as they've been this entire time, about this TMTG DWAC project, except for the fact that they haven't been right about it at any point in time, or the project wouldn't have reached this point. Now, I'm not claiming to know what the future of this project is, but I am pretty confident in saying that CNN also does not know. Now, Donald Trump, of course, has been posting on Truth Social about the fact that they are essentially just trying to steal his fortune from him. This morning, he wrote, "Through hard work, talent, and luck, I currently have almost $500 million in cash, a substantial amount of which I intend to use in my campaign for president. The often overturned political hack judge on the rigged and corrupt AG case, where I have done nothing wrong, knew this, wanted to take it away from me, and that's where and why he came up with the shocking number, which, coupled with his crazy interest demand, is approximately $454 million. I did nothing wrong except win an election in 2016 that I wasn't expected to win, did even better in 2020, and now lead by a lot in 2024. This is communism in America." He then wrote, "No trial, no jury, no crime, no victim. Only a crooked judge and a corrupt, Trump-hating attorney general who takes her orders directly from the White House. Election interference at a level never seen before." And so in order for Trump to appeal this injustice, he still has to make this bond. And the communists on television are gleeful, thinking that he won't be able to do it. What they're gonna do is go down to his buildings and just tape them all off. Let everybody know these are off limits. We are confiscating these properties. And go ahead, commies, do it. Show the whole country that your illegitimate government is now happy to go around stealing people's properties. In fact, the way for you to really drive home the point would be to steal them on April 15th when you're stealing everyone's quote-unquote tax money. That would be brilliant. They're all happy about the possibility. They want to see this happen the same way they wanted to see Donald Trump's mugshot, the same way they still want to see him handcuffed, being perp walked into prison. And all of this, of course, will have the same result as the mugshot. What happened when they got that Donald Trump mugshot? Well, first of all, Donald Trump published that mugshot himself. He wasn't afraid of it, and why would he be? It made his situation even better. All of these indictments have made his situation better. The mugshot made it better. You make these decisions against him, it makes Trump's situation better. You take his buildings, it makes Trump's situation better. But they can't help themselves because they think once they see that, then everybody's going to know that Trump really did it. And not only did he do the one thing, he did all the things. And the proof is that he's getting in trouble for doing those things. He wouldn't be getting in trouble if he didn't actually do the things. Because they still believe in our American system of justice. They want that visual proof that they've been right about Trump this entire time, and they think they're going to get it if they can go in and steal his properties. Remember, they're in a hate movement. They want to see Donald Trump and his supporters tortured. It doesn't matter if he did anything wrong or if they can prove it or if they can even explain what they think he has done. He's just bad, and so are his supporters. It doesn't matter whether the claims about them are true or not. They are the bad people based on who they are. It's just bigotry, and it lives in the hearts of all those people who claim constantly that it's the other people who are the bigots too. Now, famed political pundit and pollster and focus group manager and Kevin McCarthy roommate Frank Luntz, well, he seems to have figured out that maybe seizing Donald Trump's properties is not a great idea.
All right, Frank, the politics of this. Folks in the Biden campaign are already starting to refer to Donald Trump as Broke Don, which is interesting. And then there is the possibility that the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, would have to start or would start seizing assets, maybe even buildings. How do you think that would play?
I want you to remember this moment and don't forget it. If the New York Attorney General starts to take his homes away, starts to seize his assets, it's all going to be on camera. Pundits are going to sit there and scream about this. This man cannot be elected. You're going to create the greatest victimhood of 2024, and you're going to elect Donald Trump. If they take his stuff, he's going to say that this is proof that the federal government and the establishment and the swamp in Washington and all the politicians across the country and the attorneys generals and all of this, that this is a conspiracy to deny him the presidency. He's going to go up in the polls just like he went up every single time they indicted him. The indictment, let's not talk about whether it's justified or not, but it will prove the things that he's saying on the campaign trail, and he will go up and it may just elect him president. Do not forget that. And I say this to the Attorney General right now. If you play politics on this, this is what the Secretaries of State did in Colorado, what they did in, I believe, is Maine. His numbers went up in both states. I don't understand. I'm almost speechless in how pathetic the opposition to Trump has been and how completely misguided. And this is a perfect example of it.
What do you think about that?
I mean, my biggest question, this is the beauty of Frank having his job, which I don't have, is that happened. What you're talking about, Maine, Colorado, when you're talking about what happened in a primary. And while I don't disagree with the optics, I've spoken to people inside Trump world who are saying, instead of bankruptcy, we sit in the peace. Come to Trump Tower, please. We'll have cameras there. We'll have that fight. We'll win that optics battle. I think the bigger question is, in a general election, and given the fact that the Biden campaign has really latched on to this in a way that they haven't in most legal issues.
Broke Don. I've been surprised to hear
that. He was joking about it last night at a fundraiser as well that was off camera, whether or not that rise in the polls can carry into a general election. And you'd know better. I mean, you're talking to people, you'd know better.
How is Donald Trump beating Joe Biden? He's got 85 indictments that still exist. Felonies. How is he beating Joe Biden with the economy getting better and things cleaning up? Okay, you got still have inflation. You still have got immigration. Trump is leading. And in the seven swing states, Trump is up by the margin of error in five out of seven. Why is that happening? Because his critics are stupid and they're running a horrible campaign. And for those people who do not want Donald Trump back, they should be thankful that the people who are orchestrating his loss are as pathetic and they don't understand the American people.
So they are actually going to try to brand Donald Trump Broke Don. That is going to be about as effective as Joe Scarborough losing his mind on Morning Joe this morning, showing the cover of the New York Post with a still shot from that video yesterday of the illegal aliens who had finally figured out, oh, we can just walk over that barbed wire. Let's all do it right now while the cameras are on and these soldiers are here. What a shot that will make. Oh, they're going to see us streaming over the border. This is our chance. Let's run free into the United States. So he's holding up the cover, the New York Post cover of this very well-staged invasion event, miraculously timed to align with the passage of this second half of the minibus bill. Scarborough's holding it up, saying Donald Trump said to blame him for this, so now let's blame him. This is Donald Trump's fault. He made it impossible for the Republicans to pass the immigration bill. That would have solved this problem. Except, of course, it wouldn't have solved that problem at all. The bill was never intended to solve any problem. It was only intended to increase the surveillance state at the border, which would then increase the surveillance state in the American homeland, surveilling the men and women of America. And of course, it would provide more resources for the facilitation of this global slave trade as they bring in all of these new workers, quote unquote, into the United States from who knows where. Oh, I know, they're escaping climate change. So Joe Scarborough wants to brand Donald Trump as soft on immigration, except that's never going to work because Donald Trump is associated brand-wise with building the wall. They called him racist and xenophobic. He's associated with the travel bans, the COVID travel bans. They tried to label him as the kids in cages guy. You can't reverse the branding and blame it on Donald Trump. Yeah, you're going to convince the Morning Joe audience because they already blame everything on Donald Trump. Everything and its opposite is Donald Trump's fault, so it's no problem for them. And that's what they're trying to do here. Donald Trump is like the dictionary definition of a rich American. He is the avatar for American billionaires. The dude's got gold toilets and these people make jokes about it. He owns golf courses all around the world, some of the greatest historic properties in the world. He owns buildings all across New York City. He has been at various times a real estate mogul, a businessman, a celebrity TV star and president, and he flies around on his own jumbo jet just going wherever the hell he wants, despite the fact that he's been so indicted like 80 times. He is the picture of American wealth and they are trying to rebrand him as Broke Don. Broke Don. Oh, does it sound like broke down? How clever. Oh, you're going to nail him. He's going to be devastated forever. They're going to call him Broke Don, just like they're still calling him Drumpf. And that has totally destroyed him. These people are so mind-blowingly stupid. Either that or whoever is writing the comedy portion of this script is a comic genius. And I salute you, sir. I hope you're out there listening. This is a brilliantly written season of television. Now, yesterday on X, formerly Twitter, the Lincoln Project tweeted about the potential for Donald Trump's assets being seized. They wrote, "Make asset seizure great again." So apparently those very principled conservatives who went and started the Never Trump Lincoln Project, that's the organization started by these four guys. One of them is, pedophile. And one of the other ones has a Confederate flag cooler. And I hear that that is totally off limits, but still very principled conservatives, of course. So they want the asset seizure. And it seems right now like we are going to get it. We're going to get the visual. We're going to see how the optics play. We're going to hear about how the optics are terrible for Democrats and they never should have done this and blah, blah, blah. But as with everything else, they are going to set a precedent. They are going to create a template, and we will see that reversed on them in the future. And what template are they creating? We don't want a government that just goes around stealing people's property. That is not a government. The government's role is to protect your property. There wouldn't be a point in having a government if the government existed to steal your property. And I hope that people are finally coming to terms with that understanding, because right now the government does just steal our property. Now, your local government, your city, your state, maybe they're doing something for you. Maybe they're building your roads or providing you with police or firemen. But what's your federal government doing? They're taking money from you and then giving some of it back to your local community through politicians in your local community who are similarly illegitimate and actually getting the windfall from some of that money flowing back into your community after the federal government took it out. Oh, what joy, what a functional government that we should all definitely want. So we have a government right now that confiscates the property of the people for no reason whatsoever. It is unconstitutional and shouldn't be happening. And in the future, I believe that we will get to a point where it is not happening. That is part of the goal. We should actually have the proper aspirations for this project as a whole. And one of those has to be no more federal income tax. But no matter where you stand on that, you definitely don't want a government that just goes around taking your real estate. And hopefully people are waking up and figuring that out too, because if the government is allowed to charge you property taxes for real estate that you already own, well, you're really just renting your property from the government. But how would we look at all of this if what Donald Trump was being pursued for was the result of him committing an actual crime for which there was proof, a crime that had victims who were actually seeking justice? What if his responsibility for the commission of those crimes was indisputable? If the evidence was well beyond all reasonable and unreasonable doubt, it was just him. He did it. He must be punished. Would we then want to see assets seized, and under what terms? How would they go about doing it? We talk about and think about fairly consistently a series of Donald Trump initiated executive orders that allow for the freezing of assets, of accounts, the seizure of various assets for the participation by entities and individuals in human trafficking, crimes against humanity, foreign interference in American elections. And we know that the web of responsibility for all of these grand crimes committed by this global criminal enterprise, which is what it really is, those people need to be held accountable, and profits that they have reaped from that criminal enterprise should not be left in their possession, because there are actual victims out there that deserve recompense, perhaps even reparations, depending on what the criminal activity might have been. I am absolutely of the belief that all of the people out there who were censored on social media should be paid for that by these massive multi-billion-dollar transnational organizations, these tech companies, because people have had their rights violated and need to be made whole. Now, of course, I don't know if we're going to get to that point. I don't know that that is going to happen, but we should still be able to aspire to that. We should still think of that. I mean, if you agree with me and my position and my argument, think of that as an aspiration, a noble aspiration. Because there have been people across this country who have had their rights systematically violated for the benefit of people and entities who are committed to our destruction, our depopulation, and the subversion of the United States of America into that global, one world, liberal, international, rules-based order. Something actually does have to be done about that, and this may well be another example of that side of all of these communists boldly and publicly promoting the very policies that will see their unearned and exploitative fortunes totally destroyed. Now, there are certainly conversations to be had about whether any government should have the ability to do that. But at the same time, there has to be some way to hold accountable people who, for instance, got rich censoring people or got rich peddling COVID vaccines or even the COVID tests. How about all those organizations that took government money to ship off positive COVID tests and support the very deadly pandemic narrative? I mean, if we're trying to achieve justice for the people, I don't know how you could just ignore people who have profited throughout this period on the back of this series of complete and total scams. I said last night on social media, Trump's assets being seized is the false reality inversion of what I commonly refer to as drainage. I believe certain individuals and entities are already the targets of those executive orders, and that those seizures are being handled behind the scenes and potentially redispersed behind the scenes. And if I'm right, there will have to be a conversation about that in the future. Make asset seizure great again is a pretty bold policy. I don't think it's going to work out for them. Now, we've been talking fairly consistently about the illegitimate January 6th committee and about Liz Cheney, and we'll talk about Liz Cheney more in a little bit. But let's start with this. This morning, this is from the Daily Mail. The headline, "I was threatened by the January 6th committee into staying silent," Trump's acting defense secretary, Chris Miller, claims. Donald Trump's former acting defense secretary, Chris Miller, claims the January 6th committee threatened to make his life hell if he kept claiming his former boss authorized National Guard deployment during the Capitol riot. And that is just something that did happen. So they want him to stop repeating the true claim that he is making. In an exclusive interview with DailyMail.com, the former director of the National Counterterrorism Center said he became fearful of aggressive tactics by members of the Democrat-led panel who tried to stop him speaking publicly about a narrative that didn't align with their final report. Miller's bombshell claims follow a report by Republican Representative Barry Loudermilk that reveals the committee withheld a transcript from an interview with a top White House official where he told Vice Chair Liz Cheney and other staffers that Trump did want to deploy troops. Cheney did not immediately respond to a request for comment on whether she or any other members of the select committee corresponded with witnesses in a way that could be interpreted as threatening. Miller claims the members intimidated him and warned they would repeatedly bring him in for hours of additional testimony if he kept going on TV and defending the former president's actions. At the time, Miller said he did not have the resources to continue to battle the committee and didn't want to face more depositions for speaking to media outlets about his experiences. There was an interview that he did with Kash Patel on Sean Hannity's show on Fox News that went viral. That was kind of where they made this claim on a big platform. Again, the claim is just true. They just weren't supposed to say it to everyone on Fox News. Miller said about that interview, "The two of us were on, and the next day my lawyer got a call from the January 6th staff director. I forgot exactly who it was, but basically saying, very legalistic, well, if your client has additional information he wants to share, we'd be happy to have him re-interviewed. It was more that latent threat of, if you keep going on TV, we're going to drag you in here for additional hours of hearing testimony." So that was the nature of that whole thing. It was the latent threat of the government continuing to intrude into my life. It's unclear if any other witnesses or individuals felt they were threatened by the committee, but Miller said there was fear instilled in him that any discussion of the events that day with others would cause him to be called in for another interview with the panel. So instead, he kept to himself and didn't discuss his uneasy feelings about the panel with others until now. He said, I didn't talk about it with anybody else because of the fear or the concern. I wasn't communicating with anybody because I knew any interactions I had on it would result in me having to acknowledge that I'd been in communications with other people. And then that just sort of opens up a whole can of worms with the investigators that I just didn't want to do. It was much easier not to be involved with anybody or talk to anybody about this stuff because it was going to cause conflict and difficulties with the investigating team. So I didn't talk to other people, quite simply. Miller said it was clear to him that former Representative Liz Cheney was the one running the show with the January 6th investigation. He claims the committee's vice chair was specifically upset that the optics of his public appearances would go against the narrative that Trump was complicit in insurgency. And I have to think that right there they meant insurrection. Miller went on. That piece Cash and I did, it hit a nerve. It was like, damn, that sure got some attention. I'm sure that Cheney was looking at the optics and was like, these people are a serious threat to my narrative that she tried to establish. Further on, Miller said he definitely interpreted the panel would make my life hell if he kept going on TV. A quote from Miller. Now, you know, they'll say, no, that wasn't it at all. We just wanted to make sure that we understood all the nuance and complexity. But I definitely interpreted it as a don't fight City Hall type thing. He said, Cheney didn't have a job, actually, by that point, right? She'd been removed from all her committee assignments. This is the only thing she did. But it was pretty clear she was very active and involved in the running of the thing. He added, I have no idea about the other guy, meaning Benny Thompson. I mean, I have no idea what his role was other than I saw him on TV. I never saw him doing the day-to-day stuff. And the article concludes with one last quote from Miller. He said, I think by now, as we look at the totality of Liz Cheney's hearings, we realize it was political theater. And I actually was naive enough to think that it was going to be a serious investigation. Now, we will come back around to Liz Cheney in just a minute. But first, this is from Roll Call this morning. House passes sweeping fiscal 2024 spending package. House appropriators breathed a sigh of relief Friday as the House narrowly passed the massive $1.2 trillion wrap-up spending package under suspension of the rules, which requires a two-thirds majority. The chamber passed the 1,012-page bill by a vote of 286 to 134, with 101 Republicans and all but 22 Democrats backing the bill. It would provide appropriations for agencies covered under the defense, financial services, homeland security, labor, HHS, education, legislative branch, and state foreign operations bills, or about 70% of annual discretionary funding. That tally is lower than the 339 to 85 vote to pass the first six-bill package earlier this month, though that bill included less controversial spending measures. It also wasn't as big a public relations event as this one. That one kind of just got swept under the rug in the midst of Super Tuesday. Nobody has time for all of these stories. Sometimes these little stories that don't matter at all just fall through the cracks. And by don't matter at all, I mean it's just trillions of dollars of so-called American taxpayer money. But it isn't really American taxpayer money, is it? Because they can just create new fiat regime currency out of nothing. All they need to do is tell us that our indentured servitude has been extended down through the generations. And once they tell us that, then it becomes our money that they're spending. But not really our money, because we'll never earn it. It just means that we have to keep paying more in taxes forever, because they're just crashing the system anyway, and they're trying to bankrupt all of the American people so that they will beg to be let out of their debt, and the price will be that they agree to participate in the Great Reset. What does a few tens of thousands of dollars of debt mean? if they can lock you into a lifetime of digital surveillance that allows them full control over everything you do and say, everywhere you go, and everything you might spend your money on. And if you want to keep doing things and saying things and going places and spending money on stuff, well, then you're going to have to keep getting injected with whatever they decide is about to save your life, despite the fact that they also do still want to depopulate the planet. And so, sure, they extended your indentured servitude a couple of weeks ago, but that was the one that nobody cares about. This is the one that people care a little bit more about. So they've done it again. Rather than passing one big omnibus to get all of the spending approved on an up or down vote, they split it into two smaller packages to get all of it approved on an up or down vote, thereby leaving no particular Congress member accountable for anything. Back to the article. This time, Speaker Mike Johnson wasn't able to get a majority of his GOP conference on board for the second package, with 112 Republicans opposing it. So the Speaker of the House, who's a Republican, the Republicans have the majority, he brought a bill to the floor that would pass with a two-thirds vote, despite the majority of his conference opposing the bill. Why'd he do that? Oh, he had to keep the government from shutting down. It would have been terrible if that happened. So a ridiculous spending bill goes to the House floor, despite the Republicans having the majority. It goes to the House floor despite the Republicans having the majority and despite the majority of that majority opposing the bill. It still goes there anyway. Is that how things are supposed to work? You depend on the minority party for all the votes? It's amazing how the uniparty always wins. It's amazing how they can always settle on a unipartisan compromise. The bill faced opposition from House conservatives unhappy with general spending levels, the inclusion of Senate Democratic earmarks that would benefit the LGBTQ community, and lack of further restrictions on migrant border crossings and abortion rights. This is a pretty massive middle finger right to the faces of the American people. Some Democrats who opposed the bill were upset that it would block funding for the UN agency providing aid to Gaza while boosting immigration and customs enforcement detention bed capacity. But the measure enjoyed solid backing from House Democratic leaders who whipped in favor of the Biden administration-backed bill and have a strong track record of keeping most of their caucus in line. So no one is even pretending. This is a uniparty bill. This is the illegitimate Biden administration getting what it wants from the uniparty in the Senate and the Congress. All of these bodies are illegitimate, and the legislation is similarly illegitimate, and I expect that all of this will come out in the wash in the future, but that's something we actually have to work towards, because if we keep holding on to the belief that the solution to all of this is political and can come from within this system, what we're going to do is follow all of their rules better than anyone ever could. We're going to follow their rules so exactly that that will cost them their system somehow. People who believe that need to wake up. Are you just going to go out and vote for people because they have a little R next to their name? Look at what the people with the little R's next to their name are doing right now, including Mike Johnson, who is a very strong conservative and a very strong Christian. Now, is he doing the best he can? Is he doing a thankless job that he must do in order for a certain plan and a certain strategy to succeed? Maybe. We can leave that opportunity open. We're not trying to condemn the man, but what we have to work with is that he just did the bidding of an illegitimate president on behalf of the uniparty, on behalf of that global regime. So the bill will head to the illegitimate Senate, where they are expected to potentially pass it today. All of this is supposed to be done in advance of a midnight tonight deadline. And then the illegitimate president will sign it. And we will be told that this is going to keep our government funding. We're not going to have all those problems that a government shutdown would have caused. Except, of course, we are. We are eventually going to have those problems no matter what. Rhino member of Congress from North Texas, Kay Granger, who is the House Appropriations Chairwoman, she's not seeking re-election. She said, "I am proud to say that this bill strengthens our national security and funds critical defense efforts. Against all odds, House Republicans refocused spending on America's most crucial needs at home and abroad." And it sounds like she is trying to defend our democracy. When she is talking about national security, she is talking about the evil twin factions' hold on the United States of America. She is talking about the Uniparty's grasp on control over our government. That's the sort of statement that even normie supporters of the Republican establishment would think is crazy. The narrative battle over this spending has already been won by the people who are opposed to the spending. Now, in the immediate aftermath of this bill's passage, we get this. This is the Associated Press. Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene files motion to oust Speaker Mike Johnson. Speaker Mike Johnson is at risk of being ousted after hard right Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene filed a motion to vacate on Friday in the middle of a House vote on a $1.2 trillion package to keep the government open. It's the same political dynamic that removed the last Republican Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, just 5 months ago when far-right conservatives revolted over his compromise with Democrats to prevent a federal shutdown. But this one faces steeper odds with less GOP support. The House is scheduled to leave town for a two-week spring recess at the end of Friday's session, and it's doubtful any vote on removing Johnson would be imminent. Here is what Marjorie Taylor Greene had to say outside the Capitol to CNN's Manu Raju.
Did you file a motion to vacate?
Today I filed a motion to vacate after Speaker Johnson has betrayed our conference and broken our rules. I filed the motion to vacate today, but it's more of a warning and a pink slip. I respect our conference. I've paid all my dues to my conference. I'm a member in good standing, and I do not wish to inflict pain on our conference and to throw the House in chaos. But this is basically a warning, and it's time for us to go through the process, take our time, and find a new Speaker of the House that will stand with Republicans and our Republican majority instead of standing with the Democrats.
That's a warning. If it's a warning, does that mean that you're not going to go through and force this vote?
No, I will. I'm just
there's nothing that can convince you to back off.
There's not a time limit on this. It doesn't have to be forced and throw the House into chaos. I don't want to put any of our members in a difficult place like we were for 3.5 weeks. We're going to continue our committee work. We're going to continue our investigations. There's a lot of good investigations going that have to be able to proceed, and the American people deserve that. But I'm not saying that it won't happen in 2 weeks or it won't happen in a month or who knows when, but I am saying the clock has started. It's time for our conference to choose a new speaker.
Now, if you've been listening to this show for the last 5 months at least, you will know that during the last speaker vacancy in October of last year, first and foremost, I did not want them to name a speaker. I don't want the Congress to be able to do anything. They're illegitimate. There is no legislation they could possibly pass that the illegitimate president would sign that is actually going to help us in any way at all. There was never any chance of that happening. This has been true since January of 2023, when this Congress was sworn in. They were never going to accomplish anything for Republicans or for Americans or for their voters. That is not why they are there. And that should be obvious when considering the fact that there is no proof that any of them are seated legitimately in the first place. We can safely assume that all of them are as illegitimate as the fake President Joe Biden. We can hope that some of them are not, and I hope for their sake that at some point that is proven true and valid. But otherwise, everything we are witnessing is a product of usurped authority that none of them have the legitimate right to be exercising. This has not changed in the 5 months since we had that conversation. I did not want a speaker because there's no point in having a speaker. There's no point right now in having a Congress, and for all intents and purposes, we really don't have a Congress. What are they going to do? Have a declaration of war? I mean, come on. That whole idea vanished decades ago It's clear they have no control over spending. It's clear they're unable to hold political criminals accountable. It's clear they're unable to complete their investigations and expose all of these crimes to the American people. So what are they doing there? Seems like they're mostly just making social media content and leading the American public to form certain false beliefs. But hey, we don't always get what we want, and I didn't get what I wanted. They named a speaker, Mike Johnson. They installed him with a unanimous vote. And now we are entering the scenario that I suggested would happen 5 months ago. I talked about how in the future we would see a motion to vacate against Mike Johnson. I suspect we will see Mike Johnson removed from his position as Speaker of the Fake House, and he will be replaced, I still suspect, with Hakeem Jeffries or Liz Cheney. Everyone talked about how hopeful they were that Mike Johnson would come in and be Speaker and really get something done for Republicans and for the hardworking men and women of the United States of America. But that was never going to happen. We did not need to pretend back then. We don't need to pretend now. We don't need to pretend it's going to be different in the future. What's going to happen? Are they going to get more done now that they have rolled over and given the uniparty regime everything it wants? Are they going to have more of these devastating hearings? Are we going to busy ourselves pretending, ooh, maybe Byron Donalds should be the vice president? And hey, no offense to Byron Donalds, no offense to some of the good MAGA congressmen that we seem to have, but the body is illegitimate. What we have is a quote-unquote government who is incompetent to accomplish anything on behalf of the American people, aside from sending out strongly worded letters. As I said last fall, the best thing that can come from all of this is the full exposure of the uniparty, the understanding from Trump supporters across the board that the Republican Party establishment is simply the uniparty right. They are the controlled opposition for the Democrat Party and nothing more. Their job is to help advance the same agenda while pretending to oppose it. And they're happy to participate because for some of them, they actually believe in the virtues of that global agenda. And they accept that for the good of their little pet projects, that some of the uniparty left members get their little pet projects as well. We cannot move forward as a country or expect to hold any of these people accountable if we continue to pretend that the uniparty right controlled opposition represents an actual conservative movement, people who are actually on the political right, people who are actually working on behalf of the American people. It is none of those things. It is just controlled opposition. And I know that this makes some people sad. It makes them feel hopeless. Like, what do you mean? I can't depend on Chip Roy. Have you heard his voice? Have you seen his goatee? He seems like a pretty tough Texan. He probably drives a hard bargain. Well, yeah, sure. I mean, he did vote to approve all of the fraudulent electors after the 2020 election. But besides that, he'll probably stand up to these commies. No, he won't. None of them will. It is the uniparty right. They're just people with little R's next to their name. A little R next to their name does not mean good guy. And we can have a very passive understanding of this. Oh yeah, all politicians are bad. Oh yeah, they all lie. Oh yeah, they do what their donors tell them. And we turn a blind eye. We just assume that's how it is. That's how it's always going to be. This is the best we can expect. At least they're Republicans. They're not just going to be automatic votes for the regime. Except they are automatic votes for the regime. They will vote against one thing you don't want and for another thing you don't want. And they'll tell you, well, at least I oppose that other thing you don't want, as some other member of the uniparty right goes ahead and votes in favor of that thing that you don't want, because that's the whole point. They just mix it up. They say, well, hey, at least we're aligned on some of these things. Can't we work together on those things? Can't you just please support me for the occasions when I do vote against the things you don't want? We have to demand better if we want to get better. They have to meet a standard. And the standard is representing their constituents. Now, If they're not my congressman, then I should have no expectation for them to do the things that I want them to do. But they should do what their constituents want them to do. And it turns out their constituents often want them to do the same things that we want them to do. So we should expect a very, very serious conversation over whether or not it's responsible for Marjorie Taylor Greene to bring a motion to vacate. I mean, Mike Johnson was just doing what he had to do. He couldn't have a government shutdown, not on his watch. He needs to pass this spending so the government can do all the very important stuff that the government needs to do. And we'll see this very important debate play out, and then eventually we will see the motion to vacate get pushed through. Mike Johnson will be removed and replaced, probably with a Democrat, or maybe with Liz Cheney. What do we think is going to happen? Are they going to make Donald Trump speaker? I mean, listen, if that's what's in the script, I am down. I will play that game. I will laugh and smile and have a grand old time. That would be absolutely hilarious. I will love if that happens. But I do not expect that to happen, and I honestly don't even know why people want it to happen. I know everyone liked the possible scenario where Donald Trump would be speaker, and then he would lead an impeachment against Joe Biden and against Kamala Harris, and then Donald Trump would be third in line. He would become the president. Oh, it was so clever. What a scenario that would be. But come on. Now it's March of 2024. We have a supposed election happening in 7.5 months. Donald Trump as speaker seems pointless. And it also doesn't seem to follow where all of this is headed. Where this is headed seems to be rug pull after rug pull after rug pull. The way to stop having the rug pulled out from under your feet is to stop stepping on the rug in the first place. You don't need to just walk around in every attractive rug you see. You think, oh, I better step on that rug and stay there. All the rugs are going to get pulled out from under you. All those people who thought Mike Johnson as speaker, that's what's going to save us. Well, the rug has been pulled out from under you. We saw how the Republicans were unable to choose a new speaker last time. It's not going to be any easier this time. There's no way that MAGA or the Freedom Caucus or however you want to describe those people, there's no way they're going to go along with a choice of the establishment. So it seems we're headed for a stalemate, which means they will find a unipartisan compromise to choose the new speaker. And oh, by the way, right now, Ken Buck, who is on his own way out, yesterday signed on to a discharge petition to bring funding for the fake foreign proxy wars to the House floor without Mike Johnson bringing it. So we know the Democrats want to bring it. If enough Republicans sign on with the Democrats and they have a majority, that bill will be brought to the floor whether or not Mike Johnson brings it. The Uniparty, again, is exposing itself in its full glory. And this should be something we welcome. Yes, I get it. The news is frustrating. In your understanding of how politics worked before these last couple of years, this seems like a disaster for Republicans and conservative Americans and blah, blah, blah. It's not. The only way to stop the disaster is for everyone to understand that this disaster is happening. They need to fully recognize the existence of the Uniparty in order to deal with the Uniparty. Otherwise, both sides just keep electing Uniparty members in these fake and rigged elections. And because everyone has gotten behind the efforts of one side or another, they don't want to admit that their side is also bad. And it happens on both sides, which reinforces the necessity of each side winning for the people on that side. It is a very sad and stupid spiral that we nonetheless cannot extract ourselves from until people actually understand what it is they're supporting. And hopefully, traditionally, Republican establishment voters are finally beginning to wake up and understand, oh yeah, we are just supporting the regime too. And so let's move to one final subject, another example of the regime just doing whatever it wants and laughing in our faces. This is from the New York Post yesterday afternoon. CIA blocked feds from interviewing Hunter Biden's sugar brother, Kevin Morris, during 5-year tax probe. This is according to whistleblower testimony given to the House, quote unquote, impeachment leaders. House Oversight and Judiciary Committee chairmen say the whistleblower informed them the intelligence agency stopped IRS and Justice Department investigators from interviewing Morris in August 2021, a Hollywood lawyer and patron of the First Son, according to a Thursday letter addressed to CIA Director William Burns. The whistleblower informed Oversight Chairman James Comer and Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan that two DOJ officials were summoned to CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, and told Morris could not be a witness for their investigation into Hunter Biden. And let's go ahead and review the letter. It is not long, just a couple pages. Dear Director Burns, the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability and the House Committee on the Judiciary are investigating whether sufficient grounds exist to draft articles of impeachment against President Biden for consideration by the full House. Along with the House Committee on Ways and Means, the committee set forth in a September 27, 2023 memorandum the evidence justifying the inquiry and the scope of this impeachment investigation. On December 13, 2023, the House of Representatives adopted a resolution directing the committees to continue this investigation. Recently, the committees received information from a whistleblower alleging that the Central Intelligence Agency intervened in the investigation of Hunter Biden to prevent the Internal Revenue Service and the Department of Justice investigators from interviewing a witness. We therefore write to request relevant material from the CIA. As part of the impeachment inquiry, the committees are investigating, among other things, whether President Biden, quote, abused his power as president to impede, obstruct, or otherwise hinder investigations or the prosecution of Hunter Biden, end quote. As background, for years, the IRS and DOJ have been investigating Hunter Biden for tax crimes. The committees have documented how the DOJ deviated from its standard processes to afford preferential treatment to Hunter Biden. The committees learned about the deviations in the spring of 2023 after two brave whistleblowers testified to Congress that DOJ officials deviated, quote, from the normal process that provided preferential treatment, in this case to Hunter Biden, end quote. Among other deviations, DOJ officials restricted what investigative steps the investigators could pursue, tipped off Hunter Biden's attorneys about investigative steps, and even prevented investigators from conducting witness interviews. The whistleblower's testimony about the preferential treatment provided to Hunter Biden has been corroborated by testimony from other witnesses and documents the committees have received. The information we recently received from the whistleblower seems to corroborate our concerns about DOJ's deviations from standard process to provide Hunter Biden with preferential treatment. According to the whistleblower, in August 2021, when IRS investigators were preparing to interview Patrick Kevin Morris, an associate of Hunter Biden, the CIA intervened to stop the interview. Two DOJ officials were allegedly summoned to CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, for a briefing regarding Mr. Morris. At that briefing, it was communicated that Mr. Morris could not be a witness during the investigation. It is unknown why or on what basis the CIA allegedly intervened to prevent investigators from interviewing Mr. Morris. However, these allegations track with other evidence showing how the DOJ deviated from its standard investigative practices during the investigation of Hunter Biden. Accordingly, to further the committee's ongoing oversight and impeachment inquiry, please provide the following documents. And so they are looking for communications referring to or relating to the investigation of Hunter Biden with the DOJ or IRS and anything that relates to Patrick Kevin Morris. Now, Kevin Morris is an entertainment lawyer in Hollywood who has paid off Hunter Biden's tax debts, and he has also led an effort to sue the Marco Polo Research Group and their founder, Garrett Ziegler, and funded another lawsuit from Hunter Biden targeting Marco Polo. It's possible that Kevin Morris might not be a very good guy. But let's just take a look at the official story here. What we are being told is that the CIA is making it impossible for Congress to investigate Biden family corruption. The idea being that the CIA is protecting Joe Biden by protecting Hunter Biden and protecting Hunter Biden by protecting Kevin Morris. And of course, the justification for anything like this is always that, oh, these people are working on such important things, the congressional investigation is going to distract them from their very important work on behalf of the American people. That's what we're always told. It's either that or national security. Oh, this is going to compromise our national security. And of course, finding out that the quote unquote president of the United States of America was unequivocally corrupted and compromised and selling out American interests to our foreign adversaries for decades, well, that might compromise our national security, at least to the extent that our national security is synonymous with the security of, quote unquote, our democracy. Now, while our supposed congressional representatives are sending strongly worded letters about the CIA preventing them from getting their investigatory job done in one case, they are now launching an all-new investigation of the Transition Integrity Project, yesterday writing a strongly worded letter to Rosa Brooks. This strongly worded letter is from Representative Pete Sessions. The Post-Millennial in their coverage writes, Sessions told Brooks in the letter that he has been, quote, particularly concerned by the activities of the Transition Integrity Project in 2020 and any similar endeavor in advance of the 2024 election, because this exercise seems to have been administered adjacent to the Georgetown University Law Center, end quote. That law center is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that, as Sessions pointed out, receives hundreds of millions of dollars in federal funding every year. It would be highly inappropriate, Sessions said, for a university that relies on federal funding to conduct partisan political activity intended to undermine a lawfully conducted election. And this is very much in line with what we've seen from the universities over the past few years. Various election integrity partnerships and projects, censorship projects at Stanford, pandemic war game scenarios being run by Johns Hopkins. I mean, think about the level of involvement from academia when it comes to censorship, COVID, our elections, and the woke agenda, the gender agenda, the race agenda. All of this is coming out of universities who, despite their massive endowments, still receive, as Sessions says, hundreds of millions of dollars in federal funding. Yet another thing that absolutely must be stopped. Now, I fully expect that these commies will have a round two of the Transition Integrity Project, and I assume that we will spend plenty of time in the next 7.5 months covering that. But for now, let's return to the CIA shutting down the potential investigation of Kevin Morris. Here is a clip posted last night by Mike Benz on X, formerly Twitter, at Mike Benz Cyber, B-E-N-Z. This is one of those clips that'll really blow your mind. It's like the perfect distillation of the big picture in 6 minutes. And if you have paid attention to Prussiagate over the past few years, then you'll know that one of the central theories there is that the world is run by this invisible Prussian Empire. It is run by a network of spies and intel assets. And that these are ultimately the puppet masters. These are the ones that make everything work and push this global agenda forward. Listen to how he lays this out.
I just have to break this down in video to make it perfectly plain and clear to people what's happening with Hunter Biden and the CIA. Why was I saying 1.5 years ago that the reason Hunter Biden is untouchable by the Justice Department is because he was part of a CIA operation, multiple ones actually? You have to understand, like, what's going on here. Okay, so let me just give you, like, a dozen data points on Hunter Biden, CIA. So the first thing is Hunter was on the chairman's advisory board of the National Democratic Institute, the NDI. Okay, the NDI is the DNC wing of the National Endowment for Democracy, which is the top CIA cutout used in our tens of thousands of NGO swarms. NED ranks number one. It was created to be a NGO affiliate of the CIA. It was created to do overtly what the CIA was doing covertly and getting in trouble for doing in the 20th century, created under the Reagan administration in 1983. And there's something called the NDI for Democrats and the IRI for Republicans, the CIA wing of the Republican Party. And they both split spoils, basically on U.S. foreign policy jobs that the CIA orchestrates. You don't get to be part of the chairman's advisory committee of the NDI unless you are CIA linked or CIA vetted. It is a CIA. It's a gongo, you know, except it's a Congo, if you will. You know, NGOs, government organized, non-governmental organizations. This is a CIA organized non-conco, a CIA organized non-CIA organization. OK, it's the CIA. OK, and he's on the chairman's advisory board of that. And oh, by the way, when he was at Burisma, who was the other person on the Burisma board from the U.S. there? It was Cover Black, who had spent 30 years in the CIA. Cover Black was Mitt Romney's Sherpa to the intelligence community during his presidential run in 2012. And you know what? Mitt Romney's on the board of the IRI, who I just mentioned, the International Republican Institute, the CIA cutout counterpart to the NDI. Okay? Burisma was a CIA operation. Okay? Let me say this again. Burisma was a CIA operation. Okay? So was Naftogaz. That's the public and then respectively the private and public natural gas companies there. There were a couple other private ones in addition to Burisma. But the CIA was trying to break down Gazprom and swing the gas market from Russia to NATO. Okay? They've been trying to do this for 16 friggin' years. It's been an in-process CIA, State Department, Pentagon project for 16 friggin' years. Okay? They were trying to capacity build Burisma and shift its board to make it U.S. controlled. They're doing the same thing simultaneously with Naftogaz, the feeder that Burisma feeds into. You can even read about the power struggle between George Soros and Vladimir Putin for control over Naftogaz, the state-owned titan that has been the privatization prize of the IMF. That was part of the reason that we overthrew the Ukrainian government in 2014, is to privatize those assets because we knew that we were going to be cutting Russia off. So Western stakeholders wanted to profit from this trillion-dollar windfall if Russia could be kicked out of the European energy market. This is common activity for the Central Intelligence Agency, which was created by corporate lawyers in 1947 as its first class, okay? The corporate espionage side of the CIA operation here has geopolitical dimensions. If you kill Russia's energy exports, you kill their military, which means you kill their ability to run air defense systems to Syria. You kill their ability to run small arms to sub-Saharan Africa to oppose, you know, U.S. control over lithium and cobalt and copper and aluminum and gold and oil and gas there too. This was a long-range CIA project where Hunter Biden happened to be ass deep in exactly the number one geopolitical target of what the CIA was doing under the Obama administration, which is trying to kill Russia's energy exports. So meanwhile, you had this endogenous Ukrainian gas company that Hunter's on the board of. And by the way, who's Hunter's dad at the time? It's you know, Joe Biden, the vice president in charge of the Ukraine portfolio. But Joe Biden spent 30 years on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, 10 years rotating between chairman and ranking member. That is the coordinating wing of the Senate with the State Department and the CIA, okay? Specifically, Central and Eastern Europe. Joe Biden was hugely involved in the Yugoslavia operation in the late 1990s and breaking that up, which again was a CIA job. Okay, that's why you have to understand the structure of the blob. Whenever you see the State Department, the CIA is there and the Pentagon are there, and you just don't see it yet. Whenever you see the CIA, the State Department, and the Pentagon there, you just don't see it yet. Okay, it was like, and even British intelligence is all over this LNG story. And you don't get British intelligence without U.S. intelligence. You know, the fact is they need the CIA will lean on the Justice Department. I just did 6 hours of subscriber streams about the relationship between CIA and DOJ, and that the CIA will lean on DOJ to kill investigations into criminal activity involving assets of the CIA so that they can continue to do work that's in the U.S. national interest, even if it's a criminal enterprise, because the CIA has a license to do that. They have the license to crime under NSC 10-2. The license to do criminal activity, as long as it's plausibly deniable, And Hunter Biden was a part of a plausibly deniable CIA operation to swing the gas market towards NATO. Okay, that's why he's untouchable.
That really brings it all together, doesn't it? Last night, in response to this video, my pal Mostly Peaceful Farva wrote, "Now does the bombing of the Nord Stream pipeline make more sense? Can't have those dirty, smelly Russians selling cheap LNG to NATO countries, whether the affected NATO countries like it or not." And that's a great point. And perhaps coincidentally, although maybe not, today we get this from Berliner Zeitung, the German news outlet. Polish foreign minister says the United States knew about Nord Stream sabotage in advance and did nothing to prevent it. What a day of revelations. The Uniparty is showing itself in full bloom. And hey, it only cost us $1.2 trillion. I'll be back on Monday at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic. And Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com. And you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/I'm Your Moderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm Your Moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at imyourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'm Your Moderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon down on the range.
It's happening!